Welcome to the Voices of Veritas podcast. I'm Candace Pritz, Community Relations with Veritas Christian Academy, and I'm here with Headmaster Dr. Woods. As a classical Christian school, we often talk about the distinctives of a Christ-centered classical education. Over the years, we've discussed some of these. We're here to explore a few more of these distinctives.
Yeah, I will say that what drew me to classical Christian education years ago, what separated the search from whether I was going to continue on the path toward Christ-centered classical learning or toward just generic Christian education, K-12 and college level, was the fact that classical Christian education has a long-standing approach to teaching and learning with deep roots and deep wells that we are always going back to and drawing from.
And what might some of those be?
Well, when I think about roots, I often think about people, individuals who could easily be called or classified as pioneers who laid the foundation generations ago, frequently in other parts of the world, and they made the path straight for all of us. So our roots and some of the wells that we draw from are people such as an individual named John Amos Comenius. He was an educational reformer decades ago, and Charlotte Mason. And we have those, the influence of those two individuals are part of our classical Christian heritage.
And that partially explains our Charlotte Mason Center for Nature Studies.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do this though. Let's go back just a little bit further to an earlier figure for a few minutes who influenced Charlotte Mason. He actually had a big influence on Charlotte Mason and a great influence on Mortimer Adler, one of my favorites. John Amos Comenius, what a great name, right? Mm-hmm. He lived between 1592 and 1670. He was born in Moravia, Czechoslovakia, the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. His most important book that has been declared by many, both believers and unbelievers, as one of the most important works that influenced modern education was a unique volume entitled The Great Didactic. What's fascinating, Candace, is you go back and read this book, and it has a kind of archaic, older feel, but it was revolutionary at the time. He sought, essentially, to reclaim in the education of the children he interacted with the way children actually learn. Isn't that novel? It has, it doesn't have anything to do with contemporary models of educational psychology. It was going back and watching and listening, observing and following the natural contours of the way children actually learn.
Can you give us an example of what that might be?
Sure. One of my favorite quotes from his book, The Great Didactic, reads as follows. And as I read this, listen to how contemporary it sounds. And some people might think, so was he writing a couple weeks ago? Here's what he said. He said, the school itself should be a pleasant place and attractive to the eye, both within and without. Within, the room should be bright and clean, and its walls should be ornamented by pictures. These should be either portraits of celebrated people, geographical maps, historical plans, or other such ornaments. Without this, there should be an open place. That is, on the outside, there should be an open place for the children to walk and to play. For this is absolutely necessary for children, as we will show later. And he goes on to say, and there should also be a garden attached into which the scholars, notice he calls these little children scholars because they were readers, they were learners, which the scholars may be allowed to go from time to time and where they may feast their eyes on trees and flowers and plants. If this be done, students will, in all probability, go to school with as much pleasure as to fairs, where they always hope to see and hear something new. So this approach, the approach of our nature studies, the approach at Veritas of our art studies, where we put great works of art within our halls, is in part influenced by John Amos Comenius. Put the true and the good and the beautiful always before them, not in a cluttered, frantic manner, but in a leisurely, restful manner, so that the children may feast their eyes on such things and enjoy them and enjoy school as much as they do other fun, what they consider delightful activities.
And in so many ways, this sounds so much like Veritas.
Yes, yes. When we have people visit our school and they talk about visiting other schools, they say that it is an obvious difference when they walk the halls and they see these beautiful masterpieces on the hall, on the walls, that our students walk these halls and they see these regularly. Where many other American schools, including way too many Christian schools, were influenced by the Industrial Revolution or the more recent technological revolution, and that's altered modern schools toward factories of so-called learning. It's why most schools in the United States will follow trends. Whatever the trend of the moment is, and trends come and go, they're here and they're gone, they follow trends, and why there's such a unhealthy emphasis on data, information, and now in some public schools, career tracking as early as kindergarten and first grade. We've always been about the educational task of teaching and learning, but more importantly, ordering the affections of the students and developing lifelong learners.
And are there any other specific ways that Comenius has influenced Veritas?
Oh, yes. Well, here's another quote, and then let's see what you think of this. Mm-hmm. It says, "For the young, therefore, it is torture if they are compelled to receive 6, 7, or 8 hours of class instruction daily, and then private lessons in addition." He may be thinking about tutoring after school or hours and hours of homework imposed by the school. Now, there are some students and some parents who like hours and hours of homework, but that is not what the school should be doing. And he goes on to say, if they are overburdened with dictations and with exercises and with the lessons that they have to commit to memory until nausea, and in some cases insanity is produced. Now, I don't know if John Amos Comenius was if he tended toward the dramatic, but it does seem there he is describing some schools in his time and in our time where students are sitting and getting for hours throughout the day, and then they go home and they sit and get and explore more data and information and knowledge without growing in wisdom and understanding. And we want at Veritas to be more like the kinds of schools that John Amos Comenius is describing here. Students delight in learning in a more leisurely manner.
And in discovery, too, which is what we see in our Paideia approach in so many of our classes at Veritas. So we're uniquely positioned to constantly draw from these deep wells that you're referencing. While many Christian schools in America draw from the wells of American progressive educational models with some Christianity sprinkled in.
Right, right. And while much of modern education and even some versions of classical education have come to stress test scores or being accepted into the perfect college and getting prepared for a life of work, someone like Charlotte Mason took a very different approach. She started with a premise of the child as a human being, and she reflected again on what John Amos Comenius says, what is the best way that embodied or incarnated human beings learn? And she reflected upon the question of how it is that children learn and then said, this is what teaching should look like in such learning environments.
And to that effect, what are some specifics of Charlotte Mason's influence at Veritas?
Well, beyond having a building that emphasizes nature studies and is kind of the gateway building out into our woods and toward our chicken coop with our chickens, some takeaways from the essence of her approach to teaching and learning. There's so many, but let's just talk about a few. She said that children have a natural sense of curiosity. And like Aristotle, that children learn best by wonder. Mm-hmm. And that, early on in life, does not have to be encouraged. It actually is very natural to the way God designed human beings, this curiosity and sense of wonder. Later, it has to be cultivated and has to be encouraged. She also mentioned in more than one place that children are fully capable of understanding difficult ideas. I remember the first time years ago I saw a narration session with some very small, young grammar school children who were doing a narration on Charlotte's Web. Hmm. And I remember thinking, okay, is there a hidden camera somewhere? Because these children, they were very young. They were interacting with the work, the book, Charlotte's Web, in a very natural, organic manner. So Charlotte Mason said that children can grasp difficult ideas and we ought not to talk down to them or think less of their innate capabilities the way God made them.
Give them a little more credit.
Absolutely give them more credit. She said that children should be trained to develop habits of doing the work of understanding. And this is important because this breaks with the modern model, and you see this all too often in generic Christian schools, that education is about inputting data or inputting information as though a child is a computer. Not, absolutely not. Charlotte Mason would say you've got to develop the habits of thinking, the skills of using one's mind. In other places, she mentioned that children must be exposed to great and noble ideas through books in every discipline. She had very little patience with what we would call textbooks. She said children should be exposed to the great works of art, the great works of literature, and to God's great created order. More than once, in many places, and this is part of the classical Christian roots, she stressed the role that the Bible plays, not just as the source of divine wisdom and instruction, but a source of other understanding. She stressed that language art skills are learned primarily through narration. Memorization material is for thinking about and thinking through. You don't just memorize it and let it be dismissed or discharged from the mind within a few hours or a few days, but you memorize toward knowing and understanding. She talked about science in a very unique way and said, especially during early years, it should consist of nature studies. So if one is going to study butterflies, you don't do this by giving the students an encased box with a pinned butterfly inside of it. You go outside into nature and creation and you study and watch the butterfly. Mm-hmm. I love how in a number of places she stressed that history has got to be examined chronologically using well-written books and primary sources. Both John Amos Comenius and Charlotte Mason said that these books that are used by the students should be beautiful, not just filled with data. And then, and of course, she in many places stressed how literature can and should complement historical studies and all of one's learning.
So what I hear when you describe Charlotte Mason is that our children are not machines, mm-mm, they're not animals, mm-mm, and they are not accidental formations of cells, but they are human beings, people. Yes. And they are indeed people created in the image of God and have all of the glorious potential of full personhood.
Absolutely. And part of education, when it is done right within a classical Christ-centered environment, is it recognizes this truth and then educates children accordingly.
Are there any resources people within our school community can explore to further their understanding of these two important classical Christian reformers?
Yes. If one wanted to, you can actually go online and find a PDF version or an online version of John Amos Comenius's The Great Didactic. Now, I'll warn readers, It is dated in terms of syntax and readability, but it is a rich feast. And then people like Karen Glass have assisted us greatly when it comes to Charlotte Mason, because she has taken her, one of Charlotte Mason's key works on the education of philosophy, and she wrote a book. Karen Glass has a book called Charlotte Mason's Mind to Mind, An Essay Towards a Philosophy of Education. So it is 90% Charlotte Mason, but it is very accessible and enjoyable. And then I would highly recommend two books in a series published by Classical Academic Press. Two books, one on John Amos Comenius called John Amos Comenius, A Visionary Reformer of Schools, and then another one entitled, just came out a few weeks ago, Charlotte Mason, A Liberal Education for All. Both of these volumes are under 100 and some pages. So it really, they're quite accessible and extremely helpful. And I think what our families would find in reading these books, our parents would say, hey, that's Veritas. There clearly is an influence of these two figures on classical Christian education at our school.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing with the community today, Dr. Woods. And Veritas, thank you for tuning in. And be sure to look out for future Voices of Veritas podcasts. We hope you enjoyed the message today and that hope you have a wonderful day.